Well, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear the latest from Minnesota's 1st Brigade Red Bulls and meet the commander of the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General John Jensen.
On December 13, 1636, Massachusetts colonists who were farmers, butchers, artists, and builders banded together, forming a militia that defended their communities from attack. From those humble beginnings came today's National Guard, which proudly serves across our 54 states and territories. The iconic image of a colonial militia member setting aside their farmer's plow and picking up their musket still represents us well today. We may now also be software engineers, aviation mechanics, and other professionals our predecessors could not have imagined at the time. But our citizen airmen and soldiers continue to live as they did 381 years ago, ready to respond to the call of our state and nation. To those who have and those who continue to serve as members of our National Guard, thank you. Ours can be a challenging path to follow, but your service and the support of your families, employers, and communities ensure that we are a force that is truly always ready, always there.
Thank you, General Jensen. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Command Sergeant Major Joe Jelmstead serves as the Senior Enlisted Advisor for the Minnesota National Guard's 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team, which is part of the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. Joe is born and raised Minnesotan, who grew up in the Ortonville area and currently resides in Battle Lake. He has served as a traditional guardsman for 26 years, including 3 deployments to Iraq and Kuwait. In his civilian career, Joe is the Grant County Veteran Service Officer and has an office in Elbow Lake, Minnesota. Sergeant Major, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
It's great to be here, Tom.
Sergeant Major, being a command sergeant major is kind of getting to the top of any aspirations that a soldier would want to be, I would think. And did the 26 years you've been in go pretty quick?
Oh, they've flown by. They really have. It's amazing how quickly life goes by, but military as well with your activity and how busy you are. They seem to just click right through.
Have you spent all of it in the Minnesota Army National Guard?
I have. I've been in the Minnesota Army National Guard all 26 years, and I'm the classic example of someone who came in for school benefits. I was a 23-year-old attending school at Alec Tech and trying to figure out how I was going to pay for my second year, and one of my classmates gave a persuasive speech on why you should join the National Guard. And 26 years later, here I am.
And it's stuck, and here you are with the traditional sergeant major haircut and everything. Is that a prerequisite? You got to have enough hair to have a flat top, sergeant major?
I'm not sure if it. Yeah, probably. I'm not sure.
Well, I look like a sergeant major to me, sir. I want to talk a little bit about the Minnesota Army National Guard and the 34th Red Bull Infantry Division, of which the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team is a part. Can you explain that to our listeners so they kind of, you're part of the Minnesota Army National Guard, but the division's a different level and there's 2 sets of people kind of?
Yeah, I always compare it to a pyramid. The larger pyramid all the way at the top is big army, and then there's little pyramids that come down from the bottom. So if you picture the division as top of the pyramid, underneath that there are other organizations, 2 of which are the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team in Minnesota and the 2nd Infantry Brigade Combat Team in Iowa. And so those make up the 2 Red Bull patches themselves as a part of the Red Bulls, with some other aligned for training organizations that are also in other states and areas. So the 34th Infantry Division is a very significant organization, a very large organization.
One of actually very few divisions across the National Guard.
Yes, one of, I believe, 8, if my memory serves me correctly.
And due to their training schedule the last couple of years, including a deployment out to California and the National Training Center, really at the top of the readiness status.
We are. We pride ourselves on being ready and being prepared for whatever the nation may need and the state may need from us to fulfill that mission. So we work very hard. The National Training Center was an outstanding challenge. We prepared for nearly 2 years to go and complete that exercise. And we had approximately 7,000 total soldiers out there with our enablers from all across the country, in addition to our soldiers from Minnesota. We were very proud to have made it out there over 90% strength, meaning that over 90% of the soldiers assigned to our formation were ready and able to respond and go to that training, which was a significant number in terms of what they generally see from even the active duty units.
And Sergeant Major, I understand that's the top training event of the year in the Army. In the logistics surrounding that, I think they said the train load of equipment we shipped out there, if it was all in one train, was like 9 miles long. And you took it out in the desert and beat that equipment up just terribly and shipped it back to Camp Ripley, and the mechanics up there got it and back in good working order quickly, didn't they?
I'll tell you the logistics side of it, the work that was done by the J-4 side of the house and all of them in recovery, shooting that out there, getting it back, putting it back together, sending some over to follow-on mission for this year in Latvia, Lithuania, and then ultimately in Sweden. Their work is nothing short of amazing.
We're speaking with Command Sergeant Major Joe Jelmstad from the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team of the 34th Infantry Division on Minnesota Military Radio. Sergeant Major, just a little follow-up. Can you tell me in terms of soldiers, how many soldiers make up a division and how many make up a brigade combat team?
Boy, I was thinking you might ask that. So the ABCT, we have approximately 5,700 soldiers in the state of Minnesota. The division, I think the last numbers I heard overall is approximately 28,000. I'm not sure I want to be quoted on that, but I'm sure someone will let me know if I'm off.
Give or take. That's
give or take.
Close. And for your 1st Brigade Combat Team soldiers, most of those come from the Minnesota Army National Guard.
They do. The 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team is made up of 8 different organizations with a line for training relationship in Ohio, but 7 of those are in Minnesota and approximately 39 armories.
And of course, you have headquarters and companies all over the state, from Bemidji, Crookston, Grand Rapids, Wadena, Alexandria, St. Cloud. Come from all kinds of armories all over the state.
They do. Yeah, it's a slice of the entire state of Minnesota as a part of our formation and our ranks. So well represented.
So as the Command Sergeant Major, did you go out and visit all of those different units?
I'd love to. I'm not sure I could do it in a year. You know, I know you've had Sergeant Major Wortham on here, and he has made, I think he's on his 2nd trip of the units in the state, and that takes up a good portion of his schedule. As a traditional guardsman, I try to meet with my senior individuals twice a year so that I can visit with them, but I certainly get around to training as often as possible.
And then you spend quite a bit of time with them up at Camp Ripley for the annual training.
We do. Yeah, we get, they kind of rotate in and out. We don't, the brigade is so large that we really don't get together in one location unless we're deploying or doing something such as the NTC. But we try to meet up with each of the units on a regular basis just so that we can get those messages out that we need to, that are pertinent to them, and they can hear it from the horse's mouth instead of somewhere else. So we certainly make every effort to visit with all of them on a regular basis.
So what does it mean to be the Command Sergeant Major of the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team?
Well, I do a lot of advising to the commander, certainly help him with things that are relevant to the soldiers in the force. I also have the privilege of selecting the future leaders as we promote individuals and make selections for command leadership positions. Serve on the Senior Enlisted Management Board here in the state with Sergeant Major Wortham and the other major subordinate command CSMs so that we can help to grow our NCO Corps and develop those soldiers. The other thing is taking care of, morale and readiness issues, ensuring that their schooling is complete, ensuring that we're staying ahead of all those things in terms of readiness and preparation so that we can do what we need to do to fight the battles we need to fight.
So it's all about training, having everybody set to go. So if you're called to be deployed, you don't have to say, wait a minute, I have to do some things to do first.
Absolutely. We want to minimize the time that it would take if the ball drops, so to speak, that it takes us to get spun up and ready to go and be on site.
Sergeant Major, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of the training events that the 1st Command or 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team has been through the last few years and what's ahead for the 1st ABCT of the Minnesota 34th Infantry Division. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been visiting today with Command Sergeant Major Joe Jelmstad from the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team, which is part of the 34th Infantry Division,
here in Minnesota. And Sergeant Major, we've been on the air now for about 7 years, and we've been following a lot of the deployments and the training exercises and so forth. And seems to me that the division is about must have about the best readiness status as any Army unit in the United States, because you've been really busy.
We have been very busy. We pride ourselves on maintaining readiness. It takes a deliberate effort to do. It's something that can slide easily, and so we work very hard to maintain that.
So can you take us back to the NTC, the National Training Center, and then walk us forward? There's been quite a few events and deployments going on.
We have had. We completed the NTC mission last year, early July. The main body came home right before 4th of July. It was an outstanding exercise, about 28 days for most of our soldiers, with some on ADVON and trail. And so after that, of course, we rolled into what would be our ready year. Ready year being the year that if the nation needed us, we were ready to deploy, considered the most ready Armored Brigade combat team in the Army, because we had just completed that training. So we didn't have a mission to deploy. So instead, we were used for some other missions to help others train and to do some of the training exercises around. So we had one of the 194 went down and prepped to send their units over to Sweden for Operation Aurora. And we had two of the 136 out of Moorhead who went along with our Armored Brigade Combat Team headquarters over to Latvia and Lithuania and participated in Operation Saber Strike. We also had our brigade headquarters down helping out in Camp Atterbury. And then we had the two of the 135 was on the MFO mission in the Sinai Peninsula and then came back this summer from that deployment. So those were kind of the additional things that we were able to do based on our training previous and to maintain that and support these missions. The other units of the brigade completed some training up at Camp Ripley, some more standard training that we would normally do to maintain their readiness and keep the knife sharp, so to speak.
So, Sergeant Major, on these two events over in Europe, we actually had to, with logistics again, we had to take some equipment and things and ship it over to Europe. And as I understand it, that was kind of a convoy across a couple of countries in Europe. And when that was done, I think you left some equipment for Aurora 17 so that they could use it in Sweden. Is that correct?
We absolutely did. And, you know, you talked earlier about the rail load and getting everything out to the National Training Center, and that was a giant logistics battle to fight did very successfully, which set us up well to send the equipment that we needed for Saber Strike. So we sent that equipment over for Saber Strike. We sent a battalion's worth. For two of the 136, and they exercised it over there in their training. And then when they cleaned up and got ready to come home, they left a company's worth of equipment there. We had a little smaller element that was going over for Operation Aurora, and they ferried across the Balkan Sea or the Baltic Sea to Sweden. And so they had their company's worth of equipment there, which, you know, if you're sending a car, it's one thing. When you're sending tanks and Bradleys, it's a whole different thing. And so the logistics that go into that are gigantic. The coordination that it takes to work with those different countries and their customs and inspections and all those different things, it's a Herculean effort by that logistics community to make that happen.
So, Sergeant Major, we've got partner companies over in Europe, Croatia and Norway, and your soldiers get over there fairly often and kind of know what to expect. But was this the first time we've done any training with Sweden?
This was the first time that we've gone over to Sweden, and it was a great opportunity. The Operation Aurora was, for those soldiers, hands down the best training they've done in their careers. You know, the National Training Center is a great opportunity, and it definitely simulates that desert environment and those sorts of things. But to get into what we would term decisive action type engagement, to have the opportunity to be out in the woods, back in the green zone, so to speak, dealing with a near peer enemy in training. And we were actually had the role of playing the opposition force in that engagement, where the Swedes were the assaulting force. And the other comment that they made was that to go up against a different nation who uses different tactics was totally different. So when we fight each other, we kind of have an idea. You can anticipate what someone's going to do. When you're fighting a near peer who doesn't use your doctrine and your training, they sometimes throw some curveballs at you. So they had to react and they had to respond. I think the other big noted thing from that experience was that the entire exercise was conducted in English. And I would have never known that the Swedes weren't some folks from northern Minnesota. They did an outstanding job. Their English is better than what some of us have, and it was really just a great opportunity. And we're looking at the potential, or the tag is looking at the potential to do some follow-on things with the Swedes, similar to what we do with Norway. So we'll see how that goes in the future.
So Aurora 17 went well.
Aurora 17 went very well. Yeah, it was excellent. So
we're speaking with Command Sergeant Major Joe Jumstead from the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team of the 34th Infantry Division on Minnesota Military Radio. Sergeant Major, what's coming up in the future for the 1st ABCT?
Well, I'll tell you, Tom, it's all about readiness. It's all about making sure our soldiers are prepared to answer the call. So we're working those things coming into our next year, such as their military education requirements, making sure that they're medically and dentally sound and ready to respond, working all of those issues at that basic level to ensure that our soldiers are ready to respond to the needs of the nation. It doesn't take someone that's into, you know, any sort of heavy political science or anything else to see that the world is kind of a crazy place right now. So,
good way to put it, Sergeant Major. Sergeant Major, every year there's a percentage of your soldiers that retire. They've been in the Army National Guard long enough, and as you say, you're developing your NCO Corps and you're developing the young officers are moving up and so forth. But if for all our listeners out there all over Minnesota, if they're thinking about a career in the Minnesota National Guard, you've been at it for 26 years. You're a command sergeant major. What would you have to say to those young people?
You know, the young people, Tom, that are coming into our formations right now are phenomenal. They don't know any different than the operations tempo that we're running right now. And they're still signing up and they're still dedicated to doing this. I would tell them that it's a very rewarding opportunity. You will walk away with knowledge and experience and leadership and everything else that you're not going to get from anywhere else. And who knows, you may end up hanging around longer than you think.
Become a sergeant, command sergeant major.
Hey, someone's got to fill my shoes before too long, all right?
And you made some lifelong friendships too, sir.
Absolutely, without a doubt. I'll tell you, it's been one of the best decisions I ever made in my life.
Well, Sergeant Major, it's been a pleasure having you in the studio today, and we hope for all good things for you and all your soldiers, and love to have you back on the show sometime.
Thanks, I appreciate it, Tom.
Thanks for joining us, sir. That was Command Sergeant Major Joe Jumstead from the 1st Armored Brigade Combat Team of the 34th Infantry Division on Minnesota Military Radio. When we come back, we'll meet the commander of the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we're going to meet the commander of the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelito.
The Minnesota Commander's Task Force, or CTF as we call it, is made up of 9 congressionally chartered veteran service organizations here in Minnesota. They include the American Legion, Veterans of Foreign Wars, Disabled American Veterans, Vietnam Veterans of America, Military Order of the Purple Heart, the Marine Corps League, AMVETS, which is American Veterans, Jewish War Veterans, and Paralyzed Veterans of America. The Commander's Task Force acts as the single voice for the veterans of Minnesota. They meet regularly to discuss the issues affecting veterans and their families and facilitate communication among veteran service organizations. The CTF promotes legislative initiatives and represents veterans and their families on the Hill. The CTF is also an advisory board to me, and for that I am grateful. I look forward to working with the commanders in the upcoming year.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelito. For more information, go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the commander of the Minnesota Disabled American Veterans, Robert Sidoris. Commander, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
Commander, could you give us a little background? When did you serve in the military?
I actually joined the Iowa National Guard while I was in high school in 1963, and I re- achieved the rank of E7. I had 14 months of active duty, and after I'd received the rank of E7, I used my GI Bill to go to a registered nurses school and then transferred into the Army Reserve and retired after 25 years and 4 months with the Department of Defense as a Captain Army Nurse Corps.
Very good, sir. Now, I understand you live in northern Minnesota.
I do. My wife and I have a 26 miles northwest of Bemidji, and we have 80 acres of land here.
You sure that's still in Minnesota, Commander? You're getting pretty close to the border, aren't you?
Yeah, we are getting close. That's right.
Can you share with us, Commander, when did you get involved with the Disabled American Veterans of Minnesota?
My goodness, I guess it's been about 12 years. I started and still am a member of Chapter 7 in Bemidji, and decided that after being a commander for 2 years and an adjutant for, I went through all the chairs with the Chapter 7 and was an adjutant for 5-6 years, and decided since I was adjutant I wasn't getting to all the veterans I'd like to help, I decided to go to the state and try to work my way up to commander, because as I see it, the whole purpose of being a member of the DAV, whether you're the commander or whether you're a brand new member, is helping veterans. And I feel the day you can't help other veterans, as they're all our brothers and sisters, we just as well go home and take off our hats. So I started out as a fourth junior vice with the state and was sent to South Dakota to their convention to explain what was going on in Minnesota. And I moved up to the second junior vice, I believe it was, while I was gone. And then I went to Montana when I was a senior vice and explained to them what was going on in Minnesota. And then last May was made commander. And since that time, I've driven close to 17,000 miles, and I've visited six chapters, and I've been to, my goodness, I don't know how many events, and it's just been a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to help veterans and meet veterans and work with other ladies and gentlemen, veterans that have the same goal in helping every veteran they can possibly help.
We're speaking with Robert Sidoris, who is the commander of the Minnesota Disabled American Veterans on Minnesota Military Radio. The commander, I understand that the Minnesota DAV has a membership of close to 19,000 members?
Actually, it's over that, yes. Yes, we have over 19,000 members.
And what's your primary mission?
My primary mission is to work very hard to get the chapters and the units to work together as a team, or the auxiliary, as most people would know them. Our auxiliary is so active in helping veterans in veterans' homes and nursing homes around the state, and working towards helping the homeless, and trying to get as many veterans as we possibly can to come in and seek help, because there's so many veterans out there that need our help, but because of what happened to them when they came home or when they were in uniform during the 60s and 70s, they kind of don't want anything to do with the government or organizations, and somehow we've got to overcome that and let them understand we're here for them, and we will not back off until we can help each and every one of them that we possibly can.
Commander, I understand one of your biggest programs is your transportation program, where you help veterans get back and forth to their medical appointments.
Yes, it is. Right at this time, we have 23 vehicles around the state. We cover the Northwest, we cover the Northeast, the Metro. We have four vehicles in the Northwest, Bemidji, Park Rapids, Wheaton, and Crookston. In Northeast, we have three in Duluth and one in Virginia. And in the Metro, St. Paul and Minneapolis, we have six. Central Minnesota, Wright County, Crow Wing, and Mills Black County, we have seven. And we have two, we're working with County Veteran Service Officers in Redwood Falls and Worthington. And about 5 years ago, 3 to 5 years ago when we started, we had five vehicles. And like I say now, we have 23 vehicles. And we have approximately at this time 150 volunteer drivers. And it's important to know that all of the veterans out there can ride our vans. You do not. And I repeat, you do not have to be a member of the Disabled American Veterans to ride in the DAV van. And if you're in such a condition, have to have your caregiver go with you to the VA appointment, then that caregiver can ride with you also.
Commander, just to clarify, sir, you raise money and put those vans in service. And the veterans get to ride back and forth to their appointments for free. But you're always looking for volunteers, and they don't have to be veterans, volunteers with a good driver's license to drive those vans. Is that correct, sir?
That's correct. What we do is we purchase a van, the DAV does, and then we give it to the hospital. For instance, where we live, the van was given to the Fargo Hospital. And the Fargo Hospital then takes care of the insurance and the license and whatever else the vehicle might need. And they train the volunteers. The volunteers need to go through a background check, and they need to have a physical and trained by the VA in order to drive. And we do have problems in some areas of finding volunteers. I understand that when Channel 5 aired the article, I believe it was 2 days ago, that Minneapolis is really short drivers and St. Paul, and they did get approximately 20 people that are interested in becoming volunteer drivers. But this time of the year can be an issue because we have so many snowbirds. And when it flies south, we at some point need replacements for them.
So if anybody wants to help drive, they can go to davmn.org, and they can sign up right there on the website. And while they're there, Commander, we've only got about a minute left in this segment, you also have some great outdoor programs.
We do. We have an outstanding director of the outdoor program, John Carson. We go, and the chapters themselves around the state have different outdoor programs, whether it be deer hunting, turkey hunting, pontoon boat riding up on the Red River or up Canada, the border, or whether it be down on the Mississippi, down south, and we have pheasant hunt, European pheasant hunt. We have just all kinds of outdoor activity for both men and women, and we'd like to see more and more female veterans become involved. You don't have to go out there to shoot an animal or a bird, goose or otherwise. To enjoy the outdoors. We feel that the outdoor program does indeed help form a network of veterans that may have the same problem with the other veteran they meet, and therefore when they get to the point that they really get depressed, they get hurting, they can in fact call that person that they networked with. And I personally feel that it might indeed prevent suicides, because when they get really depressed and hurting, they call somebody that they have experienced the same outdoor experience with and are feel a brotherhood with that person or a sisterhood.
Good work, Commander. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk more with Robert Sidoris, who is the commander of Minnesota's DAV, right here on Minnesota Military Radio. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with Robert Sidoris, who is the commander of the Minnesota Disabled American Veterans. And we were talking about the transportation program and the outdoor programs. And they also have a clothing drive to raise money so they can buy these vans. And you can find all kinds of information about them at davmn.org. And while we still have the commander with us, he also serves this year as the chairman of the Commander's Task Force. And Commander, can you share with us what's the mission of the Commander's Task Force?
The main mission of the Commander's Task Force is to work on legislation for all veterans. Once we are a member, the members of the Commander's Task Force work as a team for all the commanders for one purpose, and that's for every veteran in the state of Minnesota, not just our individual organizations. So therefore, one of our big items is legislation for whatever we feel is the most important for the veterans in the state of Minnesota. One of the things that's important is we have folks that talk to our veterans and get them to get loans or give up their checks for loans and charge such enormous amount of interest that the veteran then has one heck of a time paying it back. We're trying to make that illegal, these people that prey on our veterans, and stop it as fast. There are many other legislative items that we're working on, but we have not prioritized them to this point, which is going to be first in, as all the commanders will take all of the legislative items and prioritize them, and then we will work with the legislators to get the bills written and to get be visiting and talking with them and hopefully have roundtable discussions all around the state with the legislators. We have the wonderful service of our full-time legislative and transportation officer, Trent. Trent is very, very active in talking with the legislators for us, as do other legislative folks for the other commanders in the task force.
So as the commissioner told us, you work together with the nine other federally chartered veteran service organizations and their commanders to form the Commander's Task Force. You're the chairman this year. Collectively, you add your voices together, you pick out your legislative priorities, and then you take them up to the Hill to try to help our veterans. And, sir, I know that every spring you have an event on the Hill called Vets Day on the Hill. Can you tell us about that, when it is, and how veterans can participate?
Yes, I'll be happy to. It's going to be on March 12th, 2018, and we will be having, we being the DAV, at the Veterans Service Building, which is on 20th 12th Street, we're going to have a brunch, if you will, kind of a pastries, coffee, juice, that sort of thing, starting at 8 a.m. At 10 a.m., we'll go up to the Rotunda and talk about the legislation, and then the different, Trent has it organized so that there are different legislators in different rooms for different regions of the state, and we'll each separate and go to those rooms and visit with our legislators. However, the problem we have, we only have 300 or 400 folks go to Veterans on the Hill out of 300,000 plus veterans in the state. And we need every veteran in this state, every veteran, to come down to Vets on the Hill and get involved with legislation. If we do not get involved as a veteran organization and group, we will not get legislation passed.
So you want to get as many veterans in as you can?
Yes. It'd be wonderful to have 1,000 people there or more. Even 2,000, you know, we're totally not getting enough veterans to the Vets on the Hill, and we need, they're busing in from all around the state, but we need more buses and more veterans.
Very good, sir. And we'll talk more about that when it comes up. That'd be March 12th of 2018, Veterans Day on the Hill. Commander, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having us. I'd like to say Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year to all of the veterans.
Thank you, sir. That was Robert Sidoris, commander of the Minnesota Disabled American Veterans. Joining me now is the senior enlisted advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Tom. Great to be with you again. Thank you.
Sergeant Major, every time I talk to you, you're either coming back from somewhere or you're getting ready to go. Where were you recently?
Yeah, actually, I just got back from Washington, D.C. I had a great opportunity to spend some time with some of our Croatian partners. You know, last year, we talked about our 20 years of an SPP, State Partnership for Peace Program relationship. And last night, there was a big gala event to celebrate Croatia and the United States' 25th anniversary of diplomatic relationships. So that was a really good event to represent Minnesota and spend some time with our Croatian partners out in D.C.
One of your European partners for the Minnesota National Guard, along with Norway, and I think that's been about 44 years, hasn't it?
It sure has. Yeah, it's been the longest-running bilateral agreement that is in the Department of Defense. So, yeah, that's a great relationship as well.
But Sergeant Major, I understand there's kind of an important birthday coming up next week.
Yeah, it is. You know, not as important as your birthday, Tom, but we, the National Guard, are celebrating our 381st birthday. And the National Guard came into existence, was born, if you will, on the 13th of December, 1636, which, as you know, makes us the longest military in existence. So, you know, out of the United States military. So, yeah, just a fantastic birthday for the National Guard.
I would expect a Command Sergeant Major to remember that date very well, sir.
And I do. And as I get older, the memory may not be as well, but I have a great thing called a smartphone, so it reminds me every year when the birthdays are.
All right. Technology helps.
Yes, it does.
Sergeant Major, recently in the Minnesota National Guard, we've had some people retire. General Nash retired. Colonel St. Sauver retired. It seems like a bunch of officers and enlisted retire. This happens all the time. But I understand we've got a couple of new general officers.
Yeah, we sure do, Tom. You know, and here's the great thing that everybody ought to remember is that, you know, every one of us is replaceable, and we have great people, qualified people ready to fill in those shoes when our senior leaders, when our soldiers or airmen in general, regardless of rank, are getting ready to retire. So we've had the opportunity to promote into the senior commander position up at Camp Ripley, now Brigadier General Lowell Cruz. And we've also had the opportunity to just promote the 148th commander, John Sastrom, now a Brigadier General John Sastrom, and he's the Assistant Adjutant General for the Air Force. And then with General Jensen being selected to be the Adjutant General, they had to fill the Division Commanding General position, and soon to be Major General Ben Correll is going to come back to the division. He spent time here as a deputy commanding general, and he'll come back as the division commander. And there's a change of command that'll be taking place this weekend, actually.
So, Sergeant Major, we've talked about this often. Every year there's somewhere around 8-10% of your force retires, and every year you have to replace them at the bottom. And fortunately, with the training and all the programs you've got out there, you've got a strong bench of officers and NCOs that can move up to the next level when these retirements happen.
You're absolutely right. And, you know, if as leaders we are not preparing that bench, we're not doing our job. And, you know, one of the things I was taught early on in my career was to always train your replacement. So in my case, train my replacement. And that's what we're supposed to be doing as leaders inside of our organization. Because the last thing any of us wants to have happen is for our organization to fail. And we've got strong, great leaders. Of course, that's not going to happen anyway, as far as the organization failing. But when we do our part to make sure people are trained and ready to step up and take on those responsibilities, we just ensure that even more.
Sergeant Major, there's another thing that those of us that have served in the military know, and that's that when we go off to war, we go off to deployments. The Army, Navy, Marine Corps, Air Force, Coast Guard, we all work together, and we're brothers in arms. But there's a little rivalry that happens, too, and I understand the Navy thinks they can beat up on the Army coming up pretty soon.
Well, I will tell you, you know, it's an important time of the year. We talk about, you know, this time of the year, you have to make sure you're properly greeting people, for example, you know, important sayings like Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays or Season's Greetings. But this time of the year, for those of us in the United States Army, it's also important to remember the very, very important saying of Go Army, Beat Navy, and we're hoping for a repeat this year.
All right, Sergeant Major. And I understand we just got about 30 seconds left, but I understand one of our Minnesota National Guard members is doing some coaching.
That's right. The All-Army hockey team is going to be playing the Canadian military hockey team out in New York coming up here the middle of this month. And one of our soldiers, Lieutenant Colonel Darren Janish, is one of the assistant coaches for that hockey team. So we are real proud of him and the opportunity he has to be a coach. And so I'm going to get the opportunity to fly out and watch him do his job as he coaches that All-Army hockey team.
Very good, sir. And let me see if I got this right. Go Army, go Navy, right?
It is 100% go Army, beat Navy.
Thanks for joining us today, sir.
Have a great one and take care, Tom. And happy holidays to you and all of our listeners. Thanks so much.
Thank you. That was the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week. Command Sergeant Major Joe Jumstead, DAV Department Commander Robert Sidoris, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelato of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General John Jensen. Please join us next week for our annual Chaplain's Christmas Show with some Vietnam veterans to discuss healing after more than 40 years. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio.com.